Hello, everybody. So my name is George Winnestorfer, and today on George's podcast, I will be looking into how extreme disparities in education affects how citizens turn out as people and how this can be solved. As you all know, if you are a regular listener to my podcast, you can chime in on Twitter at any time, and I will answer your questions live on the air. My Twitter handle is, of course, at George's Podcast. If you tune in regularly, you already know a little bit about my background, but if you don't, I'll summarize it. I grew up in a very middle-class suburb of Chicago in Orleans Hills, Illinois. My father was a cop and my mother was a paraprofessional in a local school district, separate from where me and my brother went to school. A paraprofessional is someone who works with special ed kids, by the way. So, I went on to graduate from Andrew High School, my local high school. After that, I went to Moraine Valley Community College, and don't you judge me. It was commonplace where I grew up. And then on to a bachelor's degree program to study education, so I know a little bit about education. So, the main issue in this podcast that we're going to be dealing with is inequality in education, and then how to fix it. And with that, let's get to it. What I'm going to start with is we first need to acknowledge that there is a gap, if you will, in education, meaning that not every school is the same or as good as the next school. To show this, I use niche.com to find a rough ranking of all the traditional public high schools in America. When I did this, I found one absolutely outstanding school called Stuyvesant High School, located in New York City, and then Humphrey County High School in Belzoni, Mississippi, in the heart of the poverty-rich Delta. I will now list the differences between the two schools. One key difference that you're going to notice, even if you use the niche.com compare tool, is that Stuyvesant is located in the middle of Lower Manhattan, right on the Hudson River in New York City. So it's a highly urban area, a highly wealthy area. Whereas Humphrey County is located in the middle of nowhere in the Delta area of Mississippi, and it's a very poor and rural area. And this does play into their funding and how money comes in there, because the median home income in Stuyvesant's district is over $1 million, actually. Whereas the median home, not the home income, I still apologize, the home value is over $1 million. The home value in Humphrey County, Mississippi, however, is only about $68,000. So already, there's a heavy disparage right there. Another difference that isn't as important, but it kind of is Stuyvesant has over 3,000 students, whereas Humphrey County only has about 400 to 500 students. And this is tied to where the schools are located. And now what I'm going to do is the thing from niche.com did give me a little bit of a base. So now I did a little bit further research, and I actually looked at the two schools individually. So first I looked at the stuff from Humphrey County. And according to greatschools.org, students at Humphrey tested far below the national average in both math and science, so very low proficiency in key subjects. It was also found that general AP enrollment was only about 9%. Also, AP in the STEM fields enrollment was less than 1%. Other than that, 100% of students enrolled at Humphrey are considered low income, and roughly 99% are racial minorities. Now let's go on to Stuyvesant. According to the New York State Department of Education, this school provides its students with free meals, which is something that other schools do. This school also has a place on its website to report bullying. It has a sexual harassment and a respect all liaison. My school didn't even have that. This school, similar to Humphrey, is also majority-minority-majority, with its percentage being 73% Asian. This school does suffer, however, from chronically low black enrollment. This school also has a very good arts program and several athletic programs, and it graduates 99% of its students. According to the U.S. News & World Report, 100% of students are proficient in math and reading. 91% of the student body has also passed at least one AP exam. However, 46% of the students are low income. So as we can see there are some similarities. One of which is a high amount of low income kids at the school. 46% is still high. It's not 100%, but it's still high. And we've also seen that they both have majority-minority populations. One is Asian and one is African-American students. So that leads me into this. At this point, it should be seen that one of these two schools is considered a good school and the other is not. Clearly, the problem isn't the fact that the school has low-income students, because in one school, almost half the student body is low-income. Yet it gets 100 times better results than the other school. The problem is also clearly not the majority-minority student body, because both schools are majority-minority, but only one is underperforming. So, what is the problem causing education inequality? From here, I set out to figure out the root cause. Funding. Funding is the root cause of all evil in education. And I should say funding, or the lack thereof. And this, honestly, it goes back to, if we're going to look at Humphrey County in Mississippi, it ties back to poverty. Because there's no money, funding for schools is tied to the property taxes of the surrounding area. So as I told you, Humphrey County, Mississippi is a high poverty area. So there's not a whole lot of money coming in. And what that then contributes to is a lack of good teachers, because there's no money there to keep them there and make them want to stay in Humphrey County for their career. They'll go somewhere else, whether that's in Mississippi or Louisiana, Arkansas, Alabama, Tennessee. I don't know. And however, when there's no good teachers, there's no solid curriculum. A lot of teachers with master's degrees would not stay in that school. And those are the teachers who teach AP. Alrighty, and then now that we see the main cause of education inequality that has been established, I now want to pivot and hopefully find some solutions. So, the first solution that I'm going to say is that we make it so every child can have a rigorous education. And honestly, this goes back to the teacher retention thing. You need good teachers to give your students a good education. It is crucial. And you want teachers with master's degrees and teachers who are full-time teachers and not temps. I know that's incredibly prevalent in Oklahoma. So teachers and having a rigorous education, that's key. And we also need to make it so every school has equal resources. And this goes back to tying to funding disparities. I'm telling you right now, super rich school with million-dollar houses around it, whether it's in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, is going to be better funded than a school in rural Mississippi or rural Oklahoma or the middle of the desert in Arizona. It's just how it is because of the property values. And we need to make the process of ending education inequality something that is managed very well with in-depth oversight, whether that's by the U.S. Department of Education or the education committees within Congress. Because if we leave a state like Oklahoma or Arizona or Mississippi, Louisiana, they are going to do what they've always done, because they're going to make it a states' rights issue and they're not going to feel the need to follow the federal order. And finally, something that I really don't like to advocate for, because I am an advocate for the public education system, is vouchers for private schools. And obviously, this doesn't work in every case, because if you're in the middle of nowhere in Kansas, the nearest private school is about 100 miles away. You can't get there. You can't get your kid there. And then you're stuck. And I am so sorry. Or if you don't even have enough money with the voucher to pay the tuition. So vouchers definitely have their place, but I wouldn't definitely want to see them become the main thing, which is what our U.S. Secretary of Education is currently trying to do, Betsy DeVos. And then we need to end property tax-based education. And honestly, this goes straight back to the poverty cycle, as I've mentioned several times in this podcast. If we keep it based on property taxes, then we are going to see disparities in education. Poor areas are going to have not as good schools, and richer areas are going to keep on having good schools. It's just how it is. So I think I've made my case at this point. It is now I'm going to open it up to counter arguments on Twitter. So the first person who I see on Twitter asked me, if school funding isn't tied to property taxes, what will it be tied to? So in my plan, it would be tied to enrollment. And evidently, flat funding will not work. I would never say that it would work. And the reason for that is because a school with about 300 kids doesn't need as much money as a school that serves 3,000 kids. And I hope to the lady who asked me that on Twitter. I hope that does make sense. So, next question. Do vouchers defeat the purpose of trying to close the gap in education inequality? And to that I say this, and my answer is not exactly. Vouchers have their place in education. But the answer to this problem is not just throwing a voucher at someone and telling them to pave their own way, especially if they still can't afford the private school. Or they don't have access to a quality one. So I go back to my example with the state of Kansas being in the middle of nowhere. Private school is 100 miles away. You just can't do it. And then you're stuck. And I hope to the young man who asked me that, I hope that makes sense. And for my third question, are we beginning to veer towards a socialization of education if every school is given the same resources? And to that I say, public schools have always been socialist institutions. The government controls the production of the product, which is education in this situation. And what we would be doing is balancing the scales. We are not making education any less socialist. Education is social, at least in public schools, it's socialist by nature. Okay, because the government is controlling the curriculum that's being taught to the students. Education is a product, it's a service. So they are controlling the service that is being taught to the students. It's a socialist idea, and it's a socialist institution. So it wouldn't change the fact that it's socialist. Public schools are socialist. And my final question is this. Why should the government have control over education? Okay, for that. For a very long time, education has been controlled at the local level and looked over by the state. Typically, there's nothing wrong at the local level because I personally think that people at the local level want what's best for their children. The problem is typically at the state level. And this is because more often than not, some states will not fund education properly because they don't want to tax their people too much. For example, a state like Oklahoma has proven time and time again that... excuse me. Has proven time and time again that they cannot be trusted to run education at the state level. This is because all they do is they cut and they cut and they cut and they cut because they run out of money because they don't want to tax their people that much. And I get not wanting to tax your people, but at some point you need to strike a balance because what they're doing to their kids in the state of Oklahoma is completely irresponsible. And that concludes our question and answer session, and now I'm just going to wrap it up, all right? So, in conclusion, education inequality is a horrible problem that traps communities of people in generational poverty with either no way out or a really, really steep and unrealistic climb out. Children's futures should not be put in jeopardy due to their zip code. Quite frankly, their zip code shouldn't even matter. Every child should be given the same opportunities in order to enrich the U.S. and world economy. And trust me, our world will be better for it. Thank you so very much. So, this podcast was brought to you by Education Week and Teaching Matters. They are both social media platforms on Twitter, Instagram, and I believe LinkedIn. They are wonderful institutions. And I would also like to thank our contributors from the Illinois Department of Education. And with that, we are through. Thank you so very much for listening today. What?